Good evening, everybody. It's wonderful to practice with all of you together tonight. This evening, I'd like to talk about Sangha. That means tonight's talk is about us. Sangha is known as one of the three jewels of Buddhism. And as most of you know, these jewels are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And as Buddhists, all Buddhists, we pay homage to them. You might recall that in our recent precept ceremony about a week and a half ago, we all recited this homage together during that ceremony. And for most of you who've practiced going all the way back to early this year when we were practicing as a group on site at our beautiful Zen Center building, you've also chanted the homage to the three jewels, during which we perform prostrations to each of these three treasures. Frequently in our talks and our Dharma dialogues, we provide an opportunity to look a little more deeply into these treasures. So at some point, most of you have been asked, what is Buddha? What is Dharma? So tonight, I'd like to look a little more deeply at the question of what is Sangha. Sangha is a Sanskrit word that can be translated a number of ways, usually as a community, as an assembly, as an association. Historically, the word was applied to all kinds of groups, like governing bodies or social organizations. So it was natural that this word was used to describe Buddha's community of followers. Early Buddhist sanghas referred only to the community of ordained monastics. So the word didn't originally apply to lay communities like ours or to the worldwide community of Buddhists in the way that we refer to it. But Buddha taught to monastics and lay people alike. So the notion of Sangha has expanded over time. Enough about the historical background. What makes a Sangha a Sangha? If we want to go beyond these standard definitions and try to really get to the heart of the matter, we might see that true Sangha is more than a group of individuals practicing together. To me, Sangha doesn't automatically appear merely because a number of people come together to practice. That is kind of the formal definition of it, but the spirit of Sangha is much deeper than that. It has nothing to do with the place in which we practice. Sangha can appear anywhere at any time, even on Zoom. It's not an organization. Many of us have heard of or even practiced in Zen communities that are divisive and dysfunctional. And although our community is pretty congenial, it's not simply a community, although Sangha does appear in the context of community. True Sangha is precious and rare. We can spend a lot of time and energy trying to find just the right definition, but this can be a little like trying to define a rose by describing its stem and its thorns and its petals. I think when Sangha appears, we can recognize it, though. And I want to talk a little bit tonight on a very personal level about times when I have really seen Sangha come alive. They might resonate with you. You might connect with these kinds of things. The first time I saw Sangha in full bloom was shortly after I'd begun to practice with Dharma Sound Zen Center, our predecessor organization. I was really new to it, and I was still on the fence about whether or not I wanted to join a group for a couple of reasons. The first one was that I was a little afraid that it might be overly dogmatic and not really be open to my sincere questions. And the second one, which is strictly personal, is that I really wasn't much of a joiner. I was pretty shy and introverted, especially at that time. So I tended to follow Groucho Marx's advice about refusing to join any group that would have me as a member. Anyway, after practice one day, one of the other members became extremely agitated about one of our founding teachers and master's Dharma talks that he had read about. He thought it was all complete hogwash, and in a really agitated way, he announced that he was going to quit, never to come back. He'd had enough of this group. I fully expected the other longtime members to defend their Zen master and defend his school and his teachings, and maybe not pay so much attention to the person himself who was having trouble with. But what I saw instead was nothing but concern for him. I was absolutely stunned. I saw that these vows that everyone recited about helping others wasn't merely dogmatic posturing. It was really alive. And at that early point in practice, I knew I'd found a safe place in which I could explore the Dharma, this tradition, this particular lineage. I know that Sangha appears for many of us during retreats. We hear this pretty often during circle talks, which we hold at the end of the retreats. For years, I was mystified by how closely connected I would feel to others after sitting side by side in silence for some period of time. This is a really palpable feeling, even with people I'd never met and whose names I didn't even know. How is it that we mutually support one another just by sitting quietly together in silence? During one of those retreats years ago, I remember a young Korean woman who would regularly drive here from Portland to attend our retreats. After one of them, she told me how precious it was for her to actually be able to practice Zen rather than the devotional form of Buddhism that is dominant in her home country. She told me that struck her as ironic and also wonderful that she had to travel halfway around the world to practice Korean Zen. Finally, and this is really where tonight's talk comes from for me, I saw Sangha on full display at our recent precept ceremony. This ceremony never fails to touch me deeply, and I think I know why. The vast majority of people around the world who believe in Buddhism never make a formal commitment to the path by taking precepts. So it's really extremely rare to witness people publicly affirm that this ancient tradition resonates so deeply within them. And at this ceremony, they've chosen to formally say yes to this path. This is for me. Then, a few years later, at another precept ceremony, we see some of those same people take additional precepts, like we did last week, or become Dharma teachers or senior Dharma teachers, really taking on support of the rest of the group and deepening their commitment, not just for me, but turning it around and formally saying, this practice is for you. Meanwhile, While all of this is going on, a number of longtime students quietly renew their own precepts during this ceremony. Over the years, the decades, the centuries, if we take the long view, the individual players come and go. That's natural. But the living Dharma is passed down to each succeeding generation through people just like us, one generation at a time. Precept ceremonies have been taking place for over 2,500 years. And our particular ceremonies, based on the one formalized by the great master Pai Chang in 8th century China. So last week, as we recited the words in our text of the ceremony, requesting the presence and the blessing of all of the Buddhas and all of the Bodhisattvas throughout history, you might have caught a glimpse of the countless generations of past practitioners supporting us as we support each other. Sangha is a rare and precious thing. And I really just wanted to spend a few minutes tonight in appreciation of Sangha in general, and particularly our Sangha. We have a beautiful Sangha, and it is a treasure to us. And I wanted to remind us, all of us, of the importance of that. And also remind ourselves of the importance of maintaining the true spirit of Sangha. Thanks.